Hi friends, how are you today? My name is Bailey Sarian and today is Monday, which means it's Murder, Mystery, and Makeup Monday. If you are new here, hi, my name is Bailey Sarian and on Mondays I like to sit down and talk about a true crime story that's been heavy on my noggin and I do my makeup at the same time. You guys, today, listen, you have been recommending this story since day one and I've been avoiding it because it's a behemoth of a story, okay? It's just like one of those cases that we have all heard about and it has had people in a chokehold for years. A killer, sometimes hooded or in a costume, who appears out of nowhere, sometimes on like an isolated lover's lane, a busy city street. Young women and couples seem to be his preferred target, but then he guns down a cab driver. And then even like targeting a busload of school children. So there seemed to be a pattern, but then again, like no pattern at all. Just more bloodshed. According to the killer, quote, because it is so much fun, end quote. Then came the taunting letters, the unsolvable ciphers, and the creepy phone calls.
This is the Zodiac speaking.
Today, more than 50 years after the notorious Zodiac killer claimed his last victim, he still holds our attention hostage. Who was he? Why'd he do it? Is he still out there watching, listening, giggling? Or maybe he's dead. Either way, police to this day still get tips about his identity, and the case, after all these years, still remains open. Investigators, they have his DNA. Still no matches. There have been suspects, but no arrests. Questions, lots of them, but no answers. What really makes the Zodiac unique, though, is like how deeply involved ordinary citizens were in trying to catch him, even to this day. So let's talk about the Zodiac Killer. So I will start with one case that is believed to be linked to the Zodiac. Maybe even like his first killing. It was back in June in 1963 at Tahigua's Point, which is like 25 miles west of Santa Barbara, California. At Lompoc High School, I guess it was like the official senior ditch day. So Linda Edwards and her boyfriend, I read it was like her boyfriend and some said it was her fiance, Bobby Domingos, they decided to head out to Tahigua's beach. So the two of them go out there and they set up like in a secluded area where they're just like sunbathing, enjoying the day. When Linda and Bobby didn't come home that evening, you know, their parents were calling friends asking like, hey, have you seen Linda or Bobby? Like, we can't figure out where they are. The next day, Bobby's car was found by the beach and nearby, the couple was found bound and tied with like a pre-cut nylon rope. Their bodies were dragged to like a little DIY shack that was built and like set up by the water and the rocks. Both of them were shot numerous times and it was just horrifying. The weapon that was used was a .22 caliber semi-automatic, probably a rifle. It appeared that the killer attempted to set fire to the shack, but I guess like had no luck and gave up on it. So the murders received lots of media attention, but unfortunately went unsolved. I mean, there were no witnesses, there were no suspects. Many years later, the police would link this crime to the Zodiac Killer, saying that this most likely was like his rehearsal. So 3 years after Linda and Bobby's tragic murder, another attack takes place, this time in Riverside, California. Near Riverside Community College. I know. I went there, bitch. It's like when you hear your name in a movie or something, you're like, oh shit. Close to home. Oh fuck. Anyways, so 18-year-old college freshman, her name was Sherry Bates. She decided to spend her Sunday at the college library to work on a research paper. Witnesses at the library said they saw her there all day up until like 9 p.m. Now, while she was in the library, what she didn't know was that the killer had like followed her there, found her Volkswagen Beetle, and disabled the ignition wiring and the distributor. Now, disabling both of these essentially kills the spark system, making the engine dead. So we got a little mechanic here. When Sherry didn't come home that night, her father called the police and reported her missing. I should have added a disclaimer. I apologize. Today's story is pretty brutal. Sherry had been repeatedly stabbed in the chest and left shoulder and had deep slash wounds to her face and neck. Now, about 10 feet from Sherry's body, investigators discovered a watch, a wristwatch, along with a footprint of like a military type boot. The wristwatch found nearby made investigators believe that Sherry like fought back. She fought her attacker. And then they also found DNA under her fingernails and scratches. But investigators had no leads. Remember, this took place before, you know, the DNA technology came into play. So they were like, we found DNA. Take a picture of it. Like, that's really all they could do. They had to Scooby-Doo the mysteries back then. Then on November 29th, after Sherry's murder, two typed letters were sent to the Riverside Police and the local press. Now, whoever wrote these letters described how Sherry was, quote, most likely lured from her vehicle and then murdered. In the letter, the killer described in detail how he had first disabled her car, then watched her repeatedly attempt to like switch on the ignition until her car battery died. Then he said that he went up to her, like knocked on the window and everyone was like, hey, can I help you out? And was able to lure her away from her car. In the letter, he stated that after walking like a short distance from her car, he told her, quote, it's about time. End quote. And then she replied, like, about time for what? To which he said, about time for you to die. This is what he said in the letter. I don't like it. Listen, there was press coverage and media attention, but again, like, investigators really had no leads. Then in April of 1967, the Riverside Police Department and Sherry's father, both of them received handwritten letters. And on a single sheet of paper, it said, Bates had to die. There will be more. Now, at the bottom of the letter, each letter, there was a number or a letter, which was either a 2 or a Z. Could be either one. They weren't sure. Now, police at the time, they considered this just to be like a really distasteful hoax and didn't think it was much of anything. Sadly, maybe they should have taken it seriously, but I don't know. But Sherry Bates, her tragic death was never solved. Now, similar to Linda and Bobby's case, again, many years later, many believe that these awful murders were linked to the Zodiac before he became, you know, the official Zodiac. They think like, you know, that Z or the 2 at the bottom of the letter was like him trying to figure out what his signature was going to be or something. So then 2 years later, on December 20th, 1968, in Benicia, California, there would be another tragic scene. Do you remember that show, Supermarket Sweep? Oh, I loved it. When I was a kid, I wanted to be on that show so bad. But now that I'm grown up, the last thing I want to do is go to the grocery store. I don't want to go to the grocery store. But thankfully, I found ButcherBox. ButcherBox delivers 100 premium protein choices straight to your door. For nearly a decade, ButcherBox has led the industry with meat and seafood that's antibiotic-free, hormone-free, and independently verified. It's a cleaner, more trustworthy version of what you would find at the grocery store, but it's delivered right to your door. Every product meets the same high standards. So whether it's filet mignon, chicken nuggets, whatever it is, they have high standards. I love being able to choose exactly what goes into my ButcherBox. They have the best ground beef, and I also love their wild-caught salmon. Plus, ButcherBox is a certified B Corp, which means they're committed to responsible sourcing, supporting workers, and reducing environmental impact. It's all high quality, super fresh, and makes dinner feel way less like a stressful 90s game show. As an exclusive offer, our listeners can get turkey or ham in their first box or choose ground beef for life.
plus $20 off your first order. Go to butcherbox.com/makeup to choose your offer and get this limited time deal with free shipping always. That's butcherbox.com/makeup. Don't forget to use the link so they know I sent you.
Now, Benicia is not far from San Francisco and is actually like one of California's oldest cities. And it's got like lots of historic charm. One of its best kept secrets is Lake Herman. It's like a big reservoir where nature lovers go to spot bald eagles, swans, and even river otters. I know. Teenagers really liked this area at the time because of how like secluded it was. So they would drive out there, park their car, and make out, you know. It was a little lover's lane situation. So on the night of December 20th, 16-year-old Betty Lou Jensen and 17-year-old David Faraday, they took a cruise up to the Lover's Lane area, and it was said that they were on their first date. David was said to be like a pretty popular student. He was an Eagle Scout and on the high school wrestling team. Betty Lou was a well-loved honor student. Everyone loved her. That night, David met Betty Lou's parents and promised to have her home by 11 p.m. Then the two of them hopped into David's Rambler station wagon and took off for the night. According to witnesses, the station wagon pulled into the Lake Herman Road area around 10:15 p.m. It's believed sometime after 11 p.m., David and Betty were parked at, you know, at the little location, the two of them, when the Zodiac Killer pulled up beside their station wagon. A man got out of the vehicle and ordered both of them to get out of the car while holding a .22 handgun. First, he's like firing off at least two warning shots. We know this because one of the shots shattered the right rear window, while the second shot struck the interior ceiling of the car. Betty Lou and David both got out of the car, you know, doing what this man's telling them to do. And then within seconds, shots were fired. David was shot beneath the lower portion of his left ear, causing a fatal brain injury. He fell to the ground next to the right rear wheel of his car. It's believed that Betty Lou, she actually tried to make a run for it because she was further out from the car. But sadly, she was shot numerous times in her back, falling to the ground again, about like 33 feet from the car. Around 11:20 p.m., someone who was like driving by the location spotted the car and the victims laying out and called police. Sadly, both David and Betty would not make it. Investigators found 10 bullet casings at the scene. And unfortunately, it was like a really cold night that evening. It was 22 degrees Fahrenheit or minus 5 degrees Celsius. So the ground was pretty frozen. And because of this, like investigators, they couldn't find any fresh tire tracks or like footprints that were hopefully may have been left behind. But police concluded that the attack took place during a 6-minute window. So it was quick. They believe it happened between 11 and 11:06 p.m. Whoever did it came in, attacked, and then got out. There seemed to be just no motive. The couple, you know, they had no cash or valuables on them, so robbery was ruled out. And autopsies revealed that there were no signs of sexual assault. At first, detectives, they homed in on a classmate of Betty Lou's. His name was Ricky. Fellow classmates told police that Ricky, like, he was talking about how he wanted to beat up David, how Betty Lou was, like, his girl. You know, it was beef. Plus, Betty Lou had mentioned that she did not like Ricky and just was creeped out by him. According to her, this Ricky guy would, like, drive by her house at night so she would make sure to keep her curtains closed because she was worried that Ricky was outside looking in her window, just being a freaking creep. So police are like, okay, we gotta look into this guy. So Ricky was questioned and looked into, but nothing came of it. Police, they wrote him off as like a creep, but he was not the killer. The Lake Herman double murder was believed to be the work of a complete stranger, and Betty and David were just targeted at random. Again, I mean, the media and everyone was reporting on it, but like there were no answers, and police really didn't know where to go from here. But then, 7 months later, and less than 4 miles away, this case took a sharp turn. It was the 4th of July, 1969 in Vallejo, California, not far from Benicia. 22-year-old Darlene Farron and her friend, 19-year-old Michael Mago, were sitting in her brown Corvair in the Blue Rock Springs Park parking lot. I guess it was like a golf course or something, but they're in the parking lot. So Darlene, she was young, right? 22. She's married. She was a new mom. She just had a baby. And she was pretty popular at the local diner that she worked at. Like, everyone loved her. Everyone loved her. It was said that she met Michael at her work and the two were friends. I guess her husband was working that night. So Darlene asked Michael if he wanted to go to the movies or like grab a bite to eat once she got off of work. And he agreed. So after work, Darlene picked him up and she told Michael that she wanted to talk to him about something. So they headed to Blue Rock Springs to park the car and just talk. Now, when they first pulled up, there were like other people in the area. But at some point, it was getting late and the other cars left. So, you know, later it was just the two of them in this parking lot. It was like almost midnight. Okay. Another car pulls into the lot. I guess about like 6 or 8 feet away from their car on the left side of her vehicle. So Michael said he like turned to Darlene and asked her if she knew who the person was. He's like, do you know who that is? Darlene responded by saying, oh, never mind. Michael said he wasn't sure what she meant by that. He's like, what? But before he could ask, the car that was parked reversed out and then sped off. He was like, okay, weird, but whatever, you know. So not even like 5 minutes later, that same car returned, pulled into the parking lot right up to the right of Darlene's car, about 10 feet back. But this time, the driver got out of the car and was holding a bright light or flashlight and like shining the light directly at them. Now, this person was just walking silently up to the passenger side door. Michael, he said he assumed it was like a cop, just wondering what they were doing out so late. So he started to like reach in his pocket for his wallet and his ID. But then suddenly he heard this muffled sound and felt a burning pain in his neck and his back. He realized like he'd been shot. So now he said he tried to scramble over the back seat to get away from the gunman. And when doing so, he got shot like in his left knee. The killer then turned his attention to Darlene, shooting her in each arm and in her back as she like tried to turn away. Finally, after like just this freaking chaos, the gunman stopped and just started walking back to his car. So Michael, obviously in pain, he started to like cry out or yell or something, but he was making noises. And the killer, I guess, hears him. So he comes back and he puts two more bullets into Michael and Darlene before casually walking away and driving off. Like, he didn't even speak a word, okay? Michael was still alive, okay? He managed to climb over the seat, open the car door, and, like, just tumbled out. He was then able to, like, wave down a passing car who then went on to get help. A 911 call came in at around 12:10 a.m. about, you know, two people getting shot at Blue Rock Springs. But then a second call came in about 40 minutes later. This time, it was from the killer. During the 911 call, it was said that the man, the killer, was speaking in like a low monotone voice and seemed to be reading from a script. Because like when the dispatcher was like asking questions, the caller was just like, again, following his little script, just talking over her. But he was calling to report a murder. He then gave directions and said police would find kids in a brown car, that they had been shot with a 9mm Luger. And he said he was responsible for the attack. But then he also told the dispatcher, quote, I also killed those kids last year. Goodbye. And then hung up. Now, he was referring to the Lake Herman Road murders. So they were able to trace the call, and they traced it back to like a payphone outside a gas station just a few blocks away from the Vallejo Police Department. Now, when they went there, the phone booth had been wiped down and like no fingerprints were retrieved. Meanwhile, police went out to the scene where they determined 9 shots were fired. 7 casings were retrieved. Sadly, Darlene would pass away. Michael, he was taken to the hospital, and he would survive. So while he's at the hospital, he was able to give a description about the man that he kind of saw, you know? He described the attacker as 5'8", extremely heavy set, but not in a, quote, blubbery fat way, saying that he had to be about, like, 195 pounds and had a very large face. So police realized they were dealing with a real psycho, you know? The local papers were reporting about the attacks in hopes to find the killers. Killer. There were leads and rumors, but again, like, it just led investigators nowhere. 1 month after the attack, the killer resurfaced. This time, though, it was by mail.
Oh, yes.
3 Bay Area newspapers each received a handwritten letter with a separate message written in, like, some kind of code. It went into great detail about the July 4th attack. In the letter, you know, the writer was describing how they were sitting in the car, how Michael had, like, jumped into the back seat and mentioned how he, quote, did not leave the scene of the killing with squealing tires, as described in the Vallejo paper, that he actually drove away quite slowly so as not to draw attention to his car. So he's like, you guys got it wrong. I drove away, like, actually really slow. Oh my God, you guys are so dramatic. But in the letters, he had described details that were, like, not public information. So they knew that whoever wrote these letters was most likely the one that did it. Now, again, along with the letters were ciphers and codes, which consisted of tiny handwritten symbols, little squares, little doodabs, shapes, funky-looking letters. It was a little, like, little puzzle, you know? Then there was a single circle with a cross through it, like the crosshairs of a rifle. This seemed to be, like, his signature symbol. The writer teased that the cipher, would reveal his identity only if they could solve it. Now, the letter ended with a warning. If the newspapers failed to print and share his cipher by the following afternoon, the killer vowed to spend the weekend shooting random people and couples until he reached 12 victims. So, all 3 newspapers were like, fucking print the cipher. Okay, so the threats of, like, you know, rampage ignited public fear, and everyone who saw this was trying to help and decode the message. And again, like, when you think about it, people love a puzzle. So everyone was just trying to, like, figure out what this was. Now, within a week, a school teacher and his wife felt like they had deciphered the message and sent their solution to the San Francisco Chronicle. Now, this little lying son of a bitch, it did not reveal his identity, okay? But it did give, like, a glimpse into this person's fucked up head, okay? In the letter, it said, quote, I like killing people because it is so much fun. I will not give you my name because you will try to slow down or stop my collecting of slaves for my afterlife, end quote. So he's a liar. No name. Okay. Now the letters from this killer would just, like, keep coming. There's a bajillion of them. So I apologize. I won't be reading you all of them. Plus, I had a really hard time reading this person's handwriting. But the one thing that was, like, consistent with the letters was that it always started with, this is the Zodiac speaking. Well, after this, it went quiet for more than a month. But the Zodiac wasn't done, just on the move.
You know when you have, like, a really good dream? Maybe it was kind of spicy. I don't know. And then the next morning, you're like, yeah, that was a good dream. But then you lose all the details. You're like, darn it, what was that dream? It was so good. Well, when you're dealing with building your dream business, you can't afford to drop any details. And that's where Shopify comes in to save the day. Shopify's point of sale system acts as your unified command center, bringing together your in-store and online operations across up to 1,000 locations. So whether you're shipping out products from your studio or ringing up sales face-to-face, Shopify keeps everything working seamlessly behind the scenes. Features like endless aisle, ship to customer, and buy online, ooh, and pick up in store, are all made simpler. So your customers can shop how they want, and your team has the tools to close the sale every time. And let's be real, acquiring new customers can get pricey. But with Shopify POS, you can keep shoppers coming back with personalized experiences. A report from EY found that businesses on Shopify POS see, on average, a 22% better total cost of ownership and an 8.9% uplift in sales relative to the market. So if you're out there building your dream, maybe you're going to write some romance novels based off of your dreams, but you got to do it from scratch. Just know you don't have to do it alone. Shopify has got your back every step of the way, from making your first sale to your 1,000th location. They help you keep track of all the details. Get all the big stuff for your small business right with Shopify. Sign up for your $1 per month trial and start selling today at shopify.com/makeup. Go to shopify.com/makeup. Shopify.com/makeup.
So then, 1969, September, Lake Berryessa. 20-year-old Brian Hartnell and 22-year-old Cecilia Shepherd, they were old friends attending separate colleges. Cecilia, she was visiting Napa Valley for the weekend, so she and Brian decided to get together, hang out, and have a picnic at Lake Berryessa on September 27th, 1969. It was a Saturday. So they grabbed a picnic blanket and a pack of cards and drove to the lake that afternoon to hang out and just enjoy the day. They ended up like settling, you know, beneath a large tree and were just enjoying the scenery. The area that they were at, where they set up, was like pretty secluded. So they're sitting down, they're like, la, 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 la. And Cecilia, she noticed that like a man seemed to be watching them from a distance. She thought he was acting a bit strange. He was kind of like hiding behind a tree, just looking in their direction. And you know, you get that feeling. You're like, something ain't right. Something ain't right here. I don't like this. Or maybe he was just like a tree hugger. Either way, I don't like that. Then the man came out wearing a large black cloth hood that covered his entire head like an executioner or like a medieval style mask situation. It's giving KKK kind of, okay, honestly. On the chest of the outfit was a white 3-inch circle with a cross drawn over it. You know, like the crosshair thing situation. He seemed to be wearing clip-on sunglasses over the hole cut eyes. You know the holes. Clip-on glasses were over those holes. Not only that, he was holding a gun and heading in their direction. Oh, fuck no. Hell, nope. What do you do? I don't know. Oh, shit. I don't like this one. The outfit? So then this man approaches them and he tells them that he was an escaped convict from Montana and that he just killed a prison guard. He told Brian to give him his car keys and money so he could flee to Mexico. Quite the story, huh? I'd be like, why the outfit though? What's that about? So Brian, he tried to talk with the man, trying to build some kind of like rapport in hopes to keep the situation calm. Brian told him, look, I don't have any cash. I don't have anything, but here's my car keys. I'll do whatever to help. So then the man pulled out a long pre-cut plastic clothesline and told Cecilia to tie Brian's hands behind his back. So she did it, but she did it like as loosely as she could, okay? But the killer, the man, went and like tightened Brian's bonds and then proceeded to tie Cecilia's hands behind her back. Brian said that he noticed that like he could see the killer's hands shaking while he was doing it.
So it's like, was it adrenaline? Was it nerves? I don't know, but he was shaking a little bit. But then with no warning, the man pulled out a long serrated knife and plunged it into Brian's back 6 times. Now, Brian, he said that he essentially just kind of played dead. Okay, just, you know, he just played dead. But then the attacker did the same thing to Cecilia, only worse, like going into a frenzy, stabbing her in the back and the stomach as she rolled around, attempting to minimize the impact of the blade. And then as soon as he appeared, he was done. And then the hooded man just walked away. The killer then walked over to Brian's car, where he took a marker and drew the crosshair symbol, the cross circle symbol, on the car door. Now, beneath the symbol, he wrote out the dates of his previous attacks, then the current date and time with the words, by knife. Brian was still alive, okay? Wow. So he untied himself, and then he freed Cecilia. A local fisherman and his son heard their screams and, like, went to help. They both were rushed to the hospital. Sadly, Cecilia would die, but Brian would survive the attack. Could you imagine? God. And then afterwards, like, oh my God, you'd be so thankful that you survived, but also the guilt of it all and just all, like, oh, the whole thing. Just awful. Almost an hour after the attack, a man called the Napa Sheriff's Department from a payphone. It was like 27 miles from the crime scene. The caller said, I want to report a murder. No, a double murder. Then went on to describe where the victims were located and what vehicle they were driving. He ended the call with, I'm the one that did it. Click. Get a hobby, my God. Why you gotta kill people? It's so lame. I don't like a killer in a costume. That's some of them, that nightmares right there. Yeah. Brian was able to give a description of the attacker and also, like, what happened.
I considered him a robber. I had absolutely no thought that he was anything but that. And when we were at this robbery stage, I didn't consider any real threat to my life or to the girl or anything. I really didn't consider this. I really wanted to help him.
Did he seem as though he would like your help at all?
No, he didn't. And he didn't even end up taking the money.
Even though he was wearing, like, the hood and whatnot, he could see, like, brown hair kind of coming through the eye hole things. That the attacker was, like, 225 to 250 in weight. That he had a large belly that hung over his pleated pants. And was around 5'8 to 5'10. Brian also explained that the band had, like, a unique way of talking. Some sources say that Brian mentioned he had some kind of drawl or accent. And then some sources say that that's not what he said. That actually he had, like, a slow, soft, monotone voice. So this time, detectives, they were able to get, like, some good evidence at the scene. The attacker left visible footprints to and from the crime scene, later believed to be a 10 and a half in size style military boot called Wing Walkers. Based off the victim's injuries, they believed the blade was similar to a bayonet type weapon, about 9 to 11 inches in length and 1 inch in width. Now, of course, there was, like, a lot of police and press coverage following the attack. The evidence was helpful, but again, there were, like, no solid leads. So then 2 weeks after the Lake Berryessa attack, on Saturday, October 11th, 1969, 29-year-old cab driver Paul Stein gets a call to pick up a passenger and drop them off at a wealthy San Francisco neighborhood, Presidio Heights. So Paul accepts the ride, whatever, you know? Now, it said that Paul picked up the man standing in front of a, like, smoke shop, and there was, like, a movie theater right next to it. Now, the movie theater was showing the film The Mikado. Some sources say this part isn't true, and then the other sources say this part is true. But here's the thing. If it is true, what is interesting is that in one of the letters sent by the Zodiac in 1974 actually quoted a line from the movie/musical, The Mikado. Now, The Mikado is like a 1967 British musical film adaptation of Gilbert and Sullivan's 1885 comic opera. The line from the letter was, "He plunged himself into the billowy wave, and an echo arose from the suicide's grave. Twitwillow, twitwillow, twitwillow." Now, this is like a paraphrased version from the song, "On a Tree by a River," also known as "Willow Twitwillow" from The Mikado. It's believed that the Zodiac used this line or whatever to add like mocking theatrical flair to his letters, you know? The lines "billowy wave" and "suicide's grave" don't appear verbatim in the song. So like he got a little creative with the lyrics, possibly to sound more poetic or haunting. But there was a correlate, like the person that wrote the letters seemed to like this little musical, yeah. Anyway, so going back to Paul Stein, cab driver. So a few minutes before 10 p.m., Paul Stein pulled his cab to a stop in the Presidio Heights neighborhood. The man that he picked up, the passenger, then pulled out a 9mm gun and shot Paul in the right side of his head, killing him instantly. Now, what the killer didn't know was that directly across the street, there were some teenagers in their home looking out the window, watching all this go down. So after killing Paul, they saw the man like remove a section of Paul's shirt. Like he cut off a piece of Paul's shirt, then used the shirt to like wipe down different parts of inside, like the taxi, then got out of the car and wiped down the outside of the front passenger door, then went and like wiped down the driver's side door handle. The killer then just like strolled away up the street. So the witnesses obviously call police. They describe the man as like 5'8", heavy build, having a reddish blonde like crew cut hair. The man was wearing glasses, dark brown trousers. He was wearing like a parka jacket that was either black or navy blue, and then dark shoes. Now, unfortunately, the police dispatcher fucked up. Okay, listen, they got the description wrong. So they put out over police radio to be on the lookout for a black male suspect. Freaking joke. Don't know how they got that wrong, right? Okay, so police are driving in the area looking for a black male suspect. And it was said that like police, you know, came into the neighborhood, looking like where the killer was believed to be walking. It's said that a police officer even pulled over and talked to a man, asked a man if he saw anyone leaving the scene. It's believed that this police officer literally stopped and talked to the killer. It was the killer. Yeah, they fucked up. They fucked up big time. Paul's body would be discovered, you know, just bloody, lifeless, and slumped across the front passenger seat. They looked at the taxi meter, and it read $6.25 at 10:46 p.m. So this, like, gave investigators essentially a timestamp of when the crime took place. Fingerprints were taken from the cab door handles, and they were able to get bloody prints from the doorpost between the driver's side door and the left rear passenger door. Now, investigators, they saw that a portion of Paul's shirt was cut off. Most likely it was done like with a knife. It sucks because the killer got away, and worst part of all, they talked to him. So a few days later, a letter arrived at the San Francisco Chronicle leading with that familiar greeting. "This is the Zodiac speaking." So the writer of the letter claimed credit for Paul Stein's murder. And to prove it, he provided evidence. It was a bloodstained piece of Paul Stein's shirt. In the letter, the Zodiac mocked police, saying they could have caught him if they had searched the park properly, along with a threat to kill school children, saying, quote, "School children make nice targets. I think I shall wipe out a school bus some morning. Just shoot out the front tire, then pick off the kiddies as they come bouncing out." So again, this was like put out there. The public was in a frenzy. Kids are now involved. So parents were like holding them back from going to school, or taken the bus. Police started following school buses to and from schools, not just in San Francisco, but like all the way down to Southern California. Luckily, there were no incidents reported, but it definitely had everyone on edge. And honestly, I feel like a lot of people just frustrated, like, how have we not caught the guy, you know? Along with it was another cipher consisting of 340 symbols, and it's also known as the Z340 cipher. So the letter, again, was released to the public. A mathematician, computer programmer, warehouse operator put their heads together and believed to have decoded the cipher. In summary, it said, "I hope you are having lots of fun trying to catch me. I am not afraid of the gas chamber because it will send me to paradise. I now will have enough slaves to work for me," and that he was not afraid of death.
Okay, let's be honest. How many of us are walking around with financial regret? We're over here saying to ourselves, I should have bought that stock. I should have bought that house when it was like not as much as it is now. Wow. Or maybe I shouldn't have spent money on those UGG boots. The truth is, uncertainty around money has stopped a lot of us from taking a risk. But one risk you don't want to take: ignoring life insurance. And thankfully, SelectQuote is here to make that simple. SelectQuote is an insurance broker. They compare policies from trusted, top-rated insurance companies to find your best fit. And the best part, they work for you for free. SelectQuote's licensed agents can match you with providers who offer same-day coverage up to $2 million worth. SelectQuote has been around for over 40 years, helping more than 2 million Americans find the right life insurance policy for their lifestyle, their health, and their budget. Their whole thing is making life insurance simple and affordable, and they do the hard work for you. I used to think life insurance was something future Bailey would deal with, but now I'm like, damn, Bailey, you're in the future. You are future Bailey. And it's not just about planning for the unexpected. It's about finally taking control of your financial future. Life insurance is never cheaper than it is today. Get the right life insurance for you for less and save more than 50% at selectquote.com/makeup. Save more than 50% on term life insurance at selectquote.com/makeup today to get started. That's selectquote.com/makeup.
So mind you, like, there were a lot of letters coming in, okay? But another one had came in because this man had a lot of free time. And it was one of the longest letters Zodiac had sent. In it, it said that police, they had actually stopped him near Paul Stein's murder, but they let him go. In this letter, it also included a bomb recipe and a diagram of the explosive that he was working on. So the witnesses from Paul Stein's murder, they linked up with a police sketch artist to draw up a composite picture of the man they saw that night. That was then released to the public. 1971. A man named Don Cheney saw in the newspaper the Zodiac letter about attacking school children. And this sounded all too familiar to him. So Don, he went to police and told them that he had lived with a man named Arthur Lee Allen's brother and that they would all go like fishing together. So he told police, I remember like Arthur having 22 pistols and rifles, and he had like a lot of weapons. But there was this one time when they were fishing together where Arthur talked about hunting people and how it would take a certain type of skill to do so. He was like, okay, odd, but okay, whatever, you know. And what really stood out to him was that Arthur talked about shooting the tires off a school bus and, quote, picking the little darlings off as they come bouncing out of the bus, end quote. Now, this is what made Don go to police, because it was very similar to what was said in the Zodiac letter. Don said, like, originally when this was mentioned to him, he just like didn't say anything because he low-key thought Arthur was just like a weirdo, you know, and that he never hung out with him again. But the letter, he was like, I have to say something. Well, now police, you know, they had this name, Arthur Lee Allen. So they locate him. Okay, they pay him a visit at his place of work in Vallejo, California. Police noted that Arthur did match the height and weight description, that he was wearing the type of like boot that would match the print in evidence, and they even took notice of his watch, a Zodiac diving watch. Now, it was said that Arthur was an avid swimmer and that the watch was a gift. Coincidences, you know? So police got a search warrant for Arthur's, he was living in a trailer in Santa Rosa, California. So, you know, they get the warrant, they take a look inside. It was said they opened up his freezer, and inside his freezer, they found frozen hamsters, squirrels, frozen birds, as well as like the insides of animals in jars. They shut the freezer. They're like, okay, noted. From his home, they took handwriting samples, hunting knives, a wooden dildo from under his bed, boots that would match those prints found at the crime scene. But unfortunately, they found no hard evidence linking Arthur to the crimes. Having dead squirrels in your freezer and a wooden dildo isn't illegal. Is having dead squirrels in your freezer? Well, I don't think so. Plus, the military-style boots that they took, very common in the military world. So it's like it wasn't, again, it's like it wasn't, you know, it wasn't enough to make an arrest. But when all this happened, Arthur's name was not like publicly released. Still, throughout the years, a lot of letters were coming in with ciphers and codes, just taunting police. They had tons and tons of suspects. People were calling in with their theories and, you know, everyone was like just trying to help. But it led them nowhere. Then the letters stopped, the ciphers stopped, and everything went silent in 1974. Years passed, no letters, no brutal murders. No mysteries. I mean, was he finally done? Maybe he died. Was the killer arrested? I mean, nobody knew. Maybe, huh? Police didn't hear anything from so-called Zodiac from 1974 to 1977. It was like, okay, maybe it's over, you know? Well, in April of 1978, the San Francisco Chronicle received a letter claiming to be from the Zodiac. So all these years later, I mean, was it finally him? Was it really him? Was he back? This letter is often called the Zodiac hoax letter. It's like one of the more controversial Zodiac letters because many experts, including original investigators, believe it was not written by the real Zodiac. But the letter was essentially saying he was back. He was like calling people pigs and that he was now in control of all things. The FBI and the San Francisco police believed that the letter was possibly written by someone trying to revive interest in the case. They believed it wasn't him because the handwriting just didn't match previous letters. People who had been studying and following the Zodiac case closely thought, again, it was a fake. But then there were many who thought, like, it was legit. It was probably from him. I mean, years had passed, yes. Like, maybe the writer was older, you know. Handwriting can change over time. Maybe he changed his handwriting on purpose. I don't know. Very mixed feelings on that letter. Many, many years go by. Then in late 1990, a man named Ralph Spinelli was facing multiple armed robbery charges, and he had something to say. Ralph said that he could identify the Zodiac killer only if they would give him some kind of deal to reduce his own sentence. He told investigators that this man he met a while back, his name was Arthur Lee Allen, had once confided in him about plans to go to San Francisco and kill a cab driver. Now, shortly after that conversation, that's when Paul Stein's murder happened. Now, this was interesting to investigators because, again, Arthur's name wasn't put out there publicly. And now this was the second time his name was mentioned as the Zodiac. I mean, it was quite the coincidence. So just 1 month after Ralph, you know, came forward, police once again got a search warrant for Arthur Lee Allen's home in February of 1991. Now, at this point, Arthur was living with his mom, but like in the basement. They get the search warrant, they go in, and this time they find some very interesting items. Okay, listen. During their search, they found 4 pipe bombs, explosives, 1 primer cord, 7 railroad torpedoes. I was like, what in the cartoon villain is this? They found newspaper clippings of all the Zodiac-related media. They found drawings and designs on how to make bombs similar to the ones drawn in the Zodiac letters. They also found a Royal Brand manual typewriter, tongue-tied there, which was said to be consistent with the typed Zodiac letters. So Arthur was brought into the station for further questioning. You know, I'm thinking, okay, you got the guy. That's him, right? You know, that he's got bombs. Yeah. But after being brought into questioning, no arrest was made. He didn't confess to anything. He's like, I just like fucking drawn bombs and stuff, you know? Despite all the red flags they found, investigators did not have concrete evidence linking him again to the crimes. Everything they had was circumstantial. They took Arthur's fingerprints. They did not match the prints lifted from Paul Stein's murder. Arthur's handwriting did not match the Zodiac letters. Arthur's DNA was taken and it did not match the saliva that was lifted from stamps on the Zodiac letters. So they were like, shit, man. Arthur seemed to have like an obsession with codes and ciphers. He lived near the crime scenes. He matched some of the descriptions. He owned a Zodiac brand watch. He had a criminal past. Yeah, Arthur was arrested for child molestation and was put in a mental institution during 1974 to 1977, the same time the Zodiac went silent. He was making bombs and collecting odd weapons. But police were like, that doesn't mean he was the Zodiac. I'm like, okay, all right, I mean, okay, all right. In my mind, I'm like, if the dude's making homemade bombs, isn't that enough just to arrest him? Not even for like Zodiac, whatever. He's making bombs. Like, Arthur, sir, what are you planning to do with all these bombs? What? You know, that part had me like really confused, right? Like, what? You could just make bombs and like just nothing happens? Well, I got to Googling. And under federal law, for someone to be charged with possessing bomb-making materials, there needs to be either a completed device in possession or clear evidence of intent to use those materials for an unlawful purpose. Apparently, the bombs they found were not fully completed, I guess. Suspicious? Yes. Illegal? Not quite. Without a finished bomb or like documented plans to use it, police couldn't justify an arrest strictly on what they found. Kind of concerning. I'm like, all right, so, okay. I mean, he found all these bombs and, okay, all right, okay, all right. Arthur was questioned. He denied any involvement and then he was released. He definitely remained a prime suspect, but was never charged. Throughout the years, the Zodiac cases had a grip on people. I mean, there are tons and tons of dedicated websites, internet threads, books, movies, anything and everything is out there, all dedicated to figuring out who this killer really was. The thing is, for every suspect put forth, like, you can find information with very convincing arguments as to, like, who he is. And you're like, yeah. But then you can find, like, great arguments debunking those claims. It's so confusing. I'm lost in my mind because I had so much time. I was just like, what? Yeah, it's just, wait, what? 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 It's just, there's so much out there. And, like, to this day, there are two Zodiac ciphers that remain unsolved. One is the Z13 cipher. It was sent in April of 1970. It contained 13 characters. And the other one is the Z32 cipher, which was sent in June of 1970, which has 32 characters. I mean, will these give further answers? Personally, I think not. Many believe that they most likely were intentionally short to mislead or mock rather than actually like be solvable. Or maybe they will give a name. So name them. It's like the only housewife meme I know. Look, people, investigators, internet sleuths have named suspects that they believe to be the Zodiac. I'll list the top suspects out there that I came across. Sorry if I missed some. There is a lot. First and foremost is Arthur Lee Allen, who we talked about. He had a military background, was an elementary school teacher where he taught his students how to communicate with codes or ciphers. His students later said that he would play music from the Mikado. I mean, people are allowed to like it, but you know, okay. He's the most like widely believed suspect. Arthur passed away in 1992 at the age of 58. And I must say, if you haven't watched the show on Netflix called This is a Zodiac Speaking, it's 3 episodes. And at first I was like, ugh, I don't want to watch that. Like, it's just, you know, whatever. But it was actually really good. I know those of you who are close to the case, you might be rolling your eyes because a lot of people think it wasn't Arthur. But damn, in that show, they made a very compelling case. After watching it, I was like, yep, Arthur, it was him. And I don't know why we're questioning it. It was him. But then again, I personally get convinced with every suspect mentioned because people have put together some very compelling evidence. The internet sleuths are so good. I should do my brows. I haven't done my brows. Who am I? In 2021, a group of independent investigators known as the Case Breakers believed that a man named Gary Francis Post, an Air Force veteran who died in 2018, was the Zodiac Killer. Now, they cited circumstantial evidence such as facial scars matching the police sketches. It was said that Gary had boasted about killing people, was obsessed with guns, violence, and was also obsessed with the Zodiac case. Someone said, I don't know who, someone had come forward and said that he, the scary guy, had hinted at being the killer. When Gary was in the Air Force, he had skills in mechanics and cryptography. He lived in California and had connections to Vallejo. He also moved around often, mirroring Zodiac's movement pattern. However, the FBI and local authorities said that Gary's DNA has never matched to the Zodiac's and that most of the claims have been just pure speculation and lacked physical proof. But I was like, okay, maybe, I don't know. Another suspect was a man named Richard Gajkowski. He seems to be a popular one. People really think it was this guy. Richard was working for an underground newspaper at the time, and his writing kind of echoed the Zodiac's tone. It was said that Richard would disappear for like periods of time around key Zodiac attacks and murders, and then would like magically resurface one day, never explaining where he was. He was just gone and then would be like, oh, I'm back now. Some say that Richard's voice matched the voice of the Zodiac almost exactly. Richard was said to be very intelligent. He was eccentric and into wordplay. Allegedly, he had like military code training. He resembled, you know, the police sketch that was put out there. He was known to change his name and use pseudonyms, something that the Zodiac also liked to do. But again, there was no physical evidence linking him to the case. Then there was Lawrence Kane. Lawrence lived in the area and matched victim descriptions. He was diagnosed with brain damage, which affected impulse control. Allegedly, it was said that he stalked Darlene Farron before her murder. But there was no direct evidence linking him to the crimes. Many of the claims were speculative. Then another suspect, Ross Sullivan. Now Ross, he worked at the Riverside College Library where Sherry Bates was killed. After her murder, Ross, I guess, just had like vanished, disappeared. Goodbye. It was said that he looked like the Zodiac sketch. He had a history of mental illness, but there was no evidence linking him to the Bay Area killings. But it's possible, like, some believe that he may be responsible for the Sherry Bates murder, since that case itself has been debated whether it was linked to Zodiac or not. Like, maybe he was responsible for Sherry. Her murder still remains unsolved. They all do, to be clear. Next on the list, Earl Van Best Jr. So Earl was actually accused by his estranged son in the 2014 book titled The Most Dangerous Animal of All. Yeah, his son wrote a book and was like, I think my dad's a Zodiac. Earl was said to match the police sketch, and his handwriting was similar to the letters. Earl had a criminal past, including marrying a 14-year-old. But the book was discredited by experts. This is what they said, not me. They said that the son who wrote the book was just like working out his own personal trauma. Earl's DNA was not a match, as far as we know, and Earl had no connection to the Bay Area crimes. Now, these were the names that I kept coming across the most, but to be fair, there are so many other theories out there. There's so many. And I could totally understand why people, again, are so involved with this case, because it's a real mystery. For some reason, like Zodiac, I never really got too much into it. And then when I was working on this, oh, bitch, I was like, oh, fuck, I get it. It goes so deep. There's so many layers, so many theories, so many things. You're just like, what the? I get it. I get it now. I'm sorry. I get it. Look, at the end of the day, the Zodiac case still remains open. Still, though, all those murders unsolved. With all the new, like, tools, science, and developments when it comes to, like, solving crimes, maybe one day we will get, like, a solid answer. People are invested and determined to figure out who the Zodiac killer was. And I think what makes the Zodiac different from all the other killers, well, he actually got away with it. Right? Yeah, I'm just gonna tell you, I gave you like just a little TLDR version. If you want, there's just so much out there. If you want to just learn more, there's a lot. It was a lot. I don't know. I wonder if it will ever be truly solved. I hope so, right? I think people really found this interesting because of the codes and ciphers. I think us as humans, we like trying to figure shit out like that, yeah? I mean, you play Wordle, don't you? I do. Do you think in these unsolved ciphers, it will give any further information, do we think? Or do you think it's like, I don't know. I don't know what to think. Well, okay, here's what I really do think. I do think it was Arthur, but at the same time, how come they didn't find like any concrete evidence? But what would be concrete, Bailey? He could have used someone else to lick the stamps, right? Like, they keep saying like no one's DNA matches the stamps, but it's like maybe he wasn't licking the stamps. What if he got like a dog or someone to lick the stamps? Plus, when it comes to this Arthur guy, what was up with his mom and his brother and stuff like that, his family? Did they know anything? The fingerprints? Whose prints were those? I don't know. Were these murders all the same guy? Because there's a lot of theories out there that believe actually none of these murders were the same guy. That's why this is such a wild mystery. At the end of the day, it's like who is responsible for these tragic murders, you know? Fucking scary. Maybe we'll never know. But we don't like that. We don't like that answer. If you haven't watched that Netflix docu-series thing, This Is the Zodiac Speaking, highly recommend. Oh, wow. I was like, it was Arthur. Deep breath. Okay. Wow. This was a journey. All right. It really was. When I get home, I'm still going to further. I am not done. This could be 18 parts. I get it now. Thank you for hanging out with me today. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day. Be safe out there. Listen, this is kind of morbid and dark, but it's the truth. If you ever get attacked, and I pray it never happens to you, but if it does, make sure to scratch the shit out of the attacker and get all the DNA under your fingernails, okay? That's one thing, okay? We have the technology now. Mystery should not go unsolved. Thank you. Have a good day. Make good choices. Be safe out there, okay? I appreciate you so much, and I will be seeing you guys later. Goodbye.